Hello everybody, my name is Alan, and this is Alan's Gadget Talk for Saturday, 10th of July, 2021. Yeah, it's so difficult to remain on schedule. First, we started doing the show with a Monday-Wednesday upload. We tried to upload an episode every Monday and Wednesday. That didn't really work. Again, then we switched to a Tuesday and Thursday. And then that didn't really work for most times. Some days we really got it on time. Well, I kind of had to predated, kind of like say the episode was for that day, even though I uploaded it later in the day, even though most folks in other time zones would probably still see it as that day, but it's the next day in the other part of the world, other side of the world. Okay, and now I'm probably doing what was supposed to be Thursday's episode on a Saturday, but is this my procrastination? I honestly, this has been the real deal breaker of my life, you could say, has been procrastination. I just can't seem to be focused, you know, and driven to I got this to do, I got that to do, I got this to do. Kind of explains why I'm not in university yet. Procrastination, the source behind, the seed, the root behind so many problems. I about to say seed. Why do I say seed? Anywho's, I probably should read tons of books, though. What kind of motivational or business books do you recommend, you know? What kind of self-help books would you recommend? Obviously, let me know on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at say_maun99. Anyways, got plenty of things to talk about. We got a lot of details about new devices coming out soon. We got a leak about the Pixel 5a and Pixel 6. It's going to be in October, so... we're now starting to get some leaks for those devices, and I bet that's Google doing its public hype machine, you know, of doing subversive leaks so that people are like, oh, there's a Pixel coming out. Oh, yeah, there's a Pixel coming out. And then October rolls on, I'm like, yeah, I want to buy that Pixel totally. That's a good phone. I would sell like hotcakes. And then towards the end of the show, we're going to talk about Jeep, an iconic brand going electric, thanks to its parent company pushing into electric vehicles. What I'd say is probably because of Tesla, because if they kept making diesel vehicles, people wouldn't buy those. People would end up buying a Cybertruck. Oh well, all that and more into this episode, so let's get rolling, shall we? In previous episodes, we've been talking about the Nord 2. In general, it's OnePlus's upcoming sequel to the famous, OnePlus Nord, if that makes sense. It's the second variant of the Nord series that is already out. There's the CE technically, but that's a core edition. That's probably the Nord 2 with the Snapdragon chip, assuming that they'd ever make one. But oh well, we know a lot of details already. We know that it'll probably have some improved specs from the OnePlus Nord originally that we covered actually on last year when we started this podcast. I kind of want to remind you, it's been a whole year. It's almost going to be a year since we started doing this podcast. So 1 year is not bad. I mean, we've got this far doing this show, kind of. I mean, I've been on Instagram for like 8 years and I've yet to have a million followers. I haven't really tried, though. That's the thing. But, let's hope I try a lot on this podcasting. Hope it takes off from there. Anyways, so the OnePlus Nord 2 is happening. We have the Dimensity 1200 chip that's going to be on this phone. We're hearing there's going to be great cameras, there's going to be great fast charging, it'll be another value for money proposition, primarily. Now we know one more thing. This phone will be launched on July 22nd. One more thing, this will only be coming to folks in Europe and India. Am I surprised a little bit? No. I mean, I the original Nord was launched primarily in Europe and India, targeted those markets. And those markets are where OnePlus has had a bit of a strength. They've had a solid market for consumers who bought flagships. And obviously, now that people want OnePlus at an affordable price a little bit. And the Nord 2 initially would probably launch in those core markets, as you could say. It would be available in other regions soon, but frankly, I'm not surprised that the date and obviously the target market here. I mean, like the original Nord, I mean, a lot of people in Europe and India would probably be interested in OnePlus, to say the least. So, yeah, I mean, so that's exciting. July 22nd, that's literally 12 days from now. able to hear more about the Nord 2. Full detail specs, though. Every little detail. And I was able to hear it here on the show. Hopefully, probably by the following episode after the event. So, yeah. Really, they're not settling for just a Nord. They want a whole line of phones, in a sense. Alright. You'll be baffled by this. It's... I know who at Qualcomm thought this was an interesting idea. Like, what were they thinking? I don't know. What meeting led to this? What Zoom meeting was like, oh, shoot. We don't have a reference device that we can actually sell to people. We need to make our own kind of phone. You know? That's literally ours. Well, if you really wanted to have a device that... was made that you could say was by a SoC maker. Good news, you have the smartphone for Snapdragon Insiders. That's the name of the phone. The smartphone for Snapdragon Insiders. That's the full name. I swear, they should have come with something different. I don't know, Snapdragon Killer or Snapdragon Monster Phone or something cooler. This is wacky. Snapdragon in smartphone for Snapdragon Insiders. That looks like a concept device, you know, that kind of cool, you know, device that if you bought it for, I mean, in fact, the thing is that this phone is not really for the mass consumers. If you think about it, it's not for the masses. It's not for high-end phone users in general. This phone, though, is basically for carriers, for developers, programmers, for those sorts of folks who probably need to get a reference Android device that has the most popular high-end chip on earth in that regard at that point of time. It's good for programmers, technically, if you think about it. If you're working at Instagram, if you're working at Clubhouse, if you're working on one of those wonky small startup, and you want a reference phone, or you're a game developer, you want a reference phone against which you can debug and run your phone, your mobile game, and really then scale your production to a bigger set of devices. Really, from there. And the thing is, I mean, reference device, you can call it, basically the smartphone for Snapdragon Insiders. I mean, it has a Snapdragon 888, so if you already get it figured out for that phone, it'll then work on a broad range of phones that have a Snapdragon 888. So it's not really a enthusiast device or special edition. It's more like a reference phone that you can get at a good price. It's a pretty high price, though. If you're a developer, if you're a company, if you're a startup, if you're a mobile carrier, if you're a business, if you want to buy this for digital transformation, you know, if you're that kind of person. So what does this phone really have? So apparently, this is similar to the ROG Phone 5. Okay, now if you are a regular consumer, go buy the ROG Phone 5. Pretty good phone. I think it's $800-$900 straight off the bat, so it's pretty good, to say the least. The smartphone for Snapdragon Insiders, quite a mouthful name again. This is probably an idea from a Zoom meeting. Has the same specs as the ROG Phone 5. It has a Snapdragon 888 processor, 16GB of LPDDR5 RAM, 512GB of storage, UFS 3.1, Android 11, a 6.7-inch Full HD Plus OLED display with 144Hz refresh rate, Gorilla Glass Victus, 65W wired fast charging, no wireless charging at all, which is ridiculous, but okay. Who am I to judge? I mean, interestingly, in terms of camera, though, you have a 64-megapixel IMX686 camera, a little similar to the ROG Phone 5 in that sense. You have 12-megapixel wide-angle, 8-megapixel telephoto with 3x optical zoom, straight off the gate. On top of this, this phone, you could say, the special phone, comes with a master and dynamic true wireless earbuds, noise cancelling. They have noise cancelling. And offer 24-bit, 96kHz audio quality. And obviously, it has aptX audio encoding, because it's a master and dynamic earbuds. Obviously, Qualcomm can't make this on their very own. So they probably have worked with different OEMs who have the next best thing to, you could say, a reference design for a company like Qualcomm. The Master Dynamic earbuds here probably have aptX encoding out of the gate, so that's to be expected. You got a 65-watt fast charger in the box, a USB-C braided cable, a custom rubber bumper case. Pretty cool. Now, in case you're wondering, the phone is actually made by Asus. As I said, Qualcomm can't be bothered to make their own phone. There's chip shortages going on, and they needed a reference. They needed to design a cool-looking phone that could sell, you know, for those who want a Snapdragon phone. So they teamed up with Asus to do it, and that's pretty cool. And the earbuds are made by Master and Dynamic, which I think is pretty good. Now, if you're curious about price, this doesn't really come cheap. It costs $1,500. $1,500. This is good money. It's a pretty hefty price for a reference design phone. Now, if you're working in a corporate setting, you could justify the cost. You could sort of tell your boss, well, I'm buying it for, you know, developmental purposes. So, you know, you could write off in the budget, sort of. So, honestly, for the audience this phone is made for, not a big price to pay, right? But if you're an enthusiast, very heavy price. In fact, the specs you have here, you could get a better Snapdragon 888 phone if you want to be so enthusiast and you want to really be an Android fanboy in a sense. But this is really for a certain set of consumers or a certain set of users who have to have phones on their hand. I'm really thinking of devs at Instagram and Snapchat and those kind of folks who want to sort of code their phones from a reference device. They don't want to, you know, try to code a device for millions of phones. They want to have a reference to go against. So this is a kind of phone for that, in that sense. And also for some enthusiasts who love Snapdragon. And this is like a love letter to Snapdragon fans. You hate MediaTek, right? Dimensity 1000 ain't cutting it for you. So this is for you, kind of. So, yeah. So, I've kind of made my opinions out there. But, yeah, I mean, what do you think about this phone? I mean, this is kind of like a one-off. I don't think they're going to make a regular out of it. I'm sure they wanted to make a reference design phone, but they thought probably that it's not worth the effort. They might as well make a sort of a one-off phone, but it's pretty cool. You get wireless earbuds, you get a phone, you get fast charger, you get a USB-C braided cable, $1,500. It's pretty good if you want to get a one-off phone to start with. You don't want a daily drive. If this isn't going to be a daily driver, then it's a good phone nonetheless. So, I mean, if you're into it, I'm gonna say it again, the smartphone for Snapdragon insiders, maybe you should really consider this. It's an interesting phone nonetheless. Leaks. That's how it feels like. We have lots of device leaks and information coming out, so let's just go through like a roundup. So the first we have here is that Samsung's maybe looking to only release the Galaxy S21 Fan Edition, or FE as they call it, just in the United States and Europe, according to industry sources who've told Yonhap News that Samsung would basically, because of the global chip shortage, Samsung could basically delay, could limit the release of the S21 FE to just the US and Europe. And also they might be potentially offering a Snapdragon Exynos variant to sort of spread out the stock for that phone, so that's interesting nonetheless. So that was surprising, frankly. I'm not surprised. I mean, the circumstances are pretty harsh, you know. It's difficult to make millions of a device and not only make them but also get them out to everyone everywhere. So it's been a difficult year, sort of, so I'm not surprised. So a bit of a blip in the road. While we're at it, the Pixel 5a has been leaked. We've heard that the Pixel 5a is coming. Google did actually announce it. Given that they're only going to be released, according to them, they'll only launch it in the US and Japan this year. But ironically, they're basically three model numbers, because Google obviously filed the Pixel 5a to the FCC, and have filed three model numbers. So there's G1F8F, GROM2, and G4S1M. 1M, okay, that's easy. Now, a strange part to note here is that the Google said that they're only going to be launching the Pixel 5a in two markets, yet we have three model numbers. Now, the first one, the first model number filed, is the US model, pretty much, because it has all the LTE bands for all the big carriers like AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile and Verizon, along with sub-6 5G bands, which means that this will be available on all the major networks in the US. Networks, I hope I said that right. But also, then there's two other models. Now, I'm kind of guessing Google's being, you know, cautious, maybe expecting the chip shortages could end, or they probably have more stock than usual, in the sense that it would sort of, in the event that they could get more supplies, they'd probably launch this variant. And obviously, there'll probably be one model, but that'll be for the Japanese market, potentially. But there's not much we know of, aside from that it would probably feature that. There'll be a 5G variant of the Pixel 5a, so that's interesting. So, but aside from that, not much information that we didn't really know of before that we've heard of already. Speaking of Pixels, the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro has already leaked. I mean, I'm not surprised, frankly, but yeah, it's quite interesting given what we're what we're going with here. So the Pixel 6 will apparently feature a 6.4-inch AMOLED screen with just two cameras at the back, a 50-megapixel main, and 12-megapixel ultrawide units. Again, computational photography all the way in that regard. 8 gigabytes of RAM, 128 and 256 gigabytes of storage. This information is coming from John Prosser of Front Page Tech, who probably has you know, stated these this information. This Pixel 6 Pro has a 6.71-inch POLED display. It's apparently going to be from LG, which is interesting. A 12-megapixel camera at the front, and a 50-megapixel main sensor at the back, 48-megapixel telephoto, 12-megapixel ultrawide, 2 gigabytes of RAM, and 512 gigabytes of storage only. That's it. This is the extra one you'll get on top of the 120 and 256 gigabytes of storage. So that's interesting. And these both phones will potentially ship with Android 12. And according to John Prosser, Google is promising 5 years, not 2-3 years, 5 years of software updates for Pixel owners, which is a big deal, even though Google does offer that much in terms of software updates. But it's nice to hear that they're planning to do that, so that's pretty good. The Pixel 6 will have a 4,614 mAh battery, whereas the Pixel 6 Pro will have 5,000 mAh battery. Now, we don't know what the processor will be on these phones. We don't know what extra technology will be there, whether there'll be the squeeze function. I don't think they'll pull it in because it's difficult. We don't know much, and we don't know the price, really. So that's we'll have to wait till the fall when they do announce the Pixel 6 and 6 Pro. That'll be interesting to see. I mean, we saw a design. It was pretty ugly, in my own opinion. I don't think that's how these phones are designed. I don't think that's how Google planned them to design, you could say. So that's that in general. But yeah, but aside from that, Realme's tablet has actually been leaked. Someone took a photo of somebody being out in the wild taking photos of the Realme pad. Like, I bet the person did not notice that what they were using was the Realme pad, and someone was going to sort of, you know, take photos with it. But I don't know why the person in the picture we have here is taking photos. It's beyond me. I think it's beyond anyone's guess as to what it is. But I'm sure they're testing some capabilities, potentially. They're sort of taking it for a spin before and be like, yeah, it was good, you know, we should release it, it's worth the time and money, you know. So yeah, so it's not much, to say the least. Oh, the WhatsApp notification, that's crazy. But interestingly enough, I think a few days ago I was watching a video done by a pretty big tech YouTuber in Pakistan called Bilal Munir. He runs a channel called Video Isagar. He did an interview with a marketing fella over from Realme, a pretty close friend of his, called Fiona, and he popped the question to her about the Realme book, whether they're going to release the laptop in Pakistan, and she kind of did say that they were gonna launch it later in the year, later on, and his channel will probably be the first to review and unbox it. But I think it's pretty interesting. So it's happening, guys. So this tablet's happening, the laptop is happening. So it's in the pipeline, so that's exciting nonetheless. So I think something to look forward to, honestly. I would love to see what Realme's take on these devices are and what they bring to the table. What do they really bring to the table that Lenovo's not doing, that what Huawei's not doing in general. So that's that. And finally, a test has arrived on 3D Mark that's interesting, primarily. And it's to show the Exynos 2200. So according to Giz China, probably wrote this down, basing off a Twitter user who wrote this in. I'll just read his actual tweet, if I could open it up. That is, I mean, to the user the Galox. This phone has the, you could say that pretty much it's sort of, its CPU performance is between the A15 and the Snapdragon 895, the forthcoming Snapdragon chipset. And then whereas the GPU is, if you look at it in that point of view, the Exynos 2200 would be the second fastest, so between both phones. Whereas the GPU, it's actually faster than Apple and Qualcomm's upcoming chips, which I think is a pretty, pretty big deal. If you look at it, I think seems like Samsung is working on its performance and on its processing prowess, you could say, if that's even a sentence. And interestingly enough, there was a test result that was posted on 3D Mark, which gave the Exynos 2200 a GPU score in the wildlife test of 8,134. For context, the Snapdragon 888 runs between 5,800 and 6,000 in 3D Mark. So basically, this upcoming chip from Samsung, the Exynos 2200, has a performance lead of over 40% over the Snapdragon 888, which I think is impressive. So the fact that it could be faster than a Snapdragon is crazy, to say the least. But the thing is also, Samsung, if they're making an Exynos chip, this would have a lot of the ARM cores, the high-speed cores, the X1 cores also, and X2 cores probably, that the A95 has. So I'm not surprised, frankly. So that's exciting nonetheless. But what do you think about everything you've heard? You know, I mean, let me know. You know my socials, it's in the show notes. I mean, let's just switch gears. I mean, in a sense. And finally, Stellantis, which is this mega new car maker that's basically been a merger between the owner of Fiat and the owner of Citroën? Yeah, Citroën, which is the famous French car maker. Those kind of two companies already combined at the beginning of the year to become Stellantis. They obviously have announced one big thing since their merger, and now that's their EV strategy going forward into the future, what they mean by electric cars. And their plan for electrification is quite promising. And it's quite a change from their sort of, model-to-model basis, where some brands had, like, some EV models, compliance cars, a bit of everything, you could say. But here you have a full-blown approach that they have made, in a sense that they're looking to create they have a full-blown EV strategy. It starts with a full architecture that they're calling STLA, as it stands for, and there'll basically be four platforms for, you can call, battery electric vehicles. And those four types of platforms will give you different flexibilities, different circumstances, and it'll sort of aim to fit a range of cars that are out there. So obviously one size doesn't really fit all. So the first one is STLA small, which essentially is the smallest possible spec for hatchbacks and those sorts of cars out there. It basically would give you up to 500 kilometers of range, and it would be on a unibody design primarily. And then there is STLA Medium, which has 700 kilometers of range primarily, and then STLA Large has 800 kilometers of range, and large being that it's also still on all on unibody architecture design wise. And then you have STLA Frame, which gives you 800 kilometers of electric battery charge and utilizes a single body on frame structure, which means it's for specific types of cars like trucks and enterprise vehicles that probably need a different configuration, or car can be flexible and can be added on. So STLA Small has an overall power consumption of up to, between 37 to 82 kilowatts per hour, and then medium takes you to about 87 to 104 kilowatt hours, and then large takes you from 101 to 118 kilowatts per hour. So it's almost in neck and neck in range of medium, but it's still ahead. And then STLA Frame gives you even more power, which is 159 to about 200 plus kilowatt hours, which is significantly beefier for what it is. And with it, you have a different, and then also you have two different battery designs that they're planning to offer. It's based on lithium ions, obviously. You have two varieties sort of that they're planning to offer, and the plan is to switch to solid state batteries by 2026, which I think is ambitious to say the least. So, as I said, Stellantis has created four different platforms. They're built for a wide range of cars, and apparently each platform will be able to handle up to 2 million units per year of sales, which I think is big. An idea is that all architectures have similar sorts of components, and obviously they'll be able to tweak things from market to market, which I think is still important primarily. So that's interesting to say the least. But more interesting than that is that iconic brands, like this finally means now that all their 14 brands will make the jump to electric vehicles easily without additional effort or hassle or needing to create different, you know, variety of cars for different sorts of vehicles for different compliances. But as I said, Stellantis is really readying for a future where all their brands will have all electric vehicles and not one of them will be offering a gas guzzling variety. Just for context, Jeep, zero emission freedom. That's interesting. Fiat, it's only green when it's green for all. That's crazy. What else? Peugeot, if I said that right. Turning sustainable mobility into quality time. Yikes. Wow, that's smart. So that's crazy, primarily. So the plan is that they're going to spend over 30 billion euros through 2025 in getting electrification done. And apparently this investment is basically 30% better than the industry average, which I think is powerful. And the plan is that they want to get 70% of all sales in Europe and over 40% of sales in the US, which I think is achievable given how iconic all these brands are and how big they are overall. And as I said, we've talked about the four design architectures that are there to give you sort of different styles of vehicles primarily. And there's also a global EV battery sourcing strategy, over 260 gigawatt per hour to be had by 2030, and that's thanks to 5 gigafactories, kind of taking idea from Tesla probably, 5 gigafactories that will be built across Europe and North America, and obviously there'll be some plants that'll be reutilized or rejigged to do that primarily, which I think is ambitious to say the least. It is quite ambitious primarily, you know, in terms of offering a broad range of electric vehicles in that sense. But more interesting than that, again, you have brands like Jeep that are promising a electric vehicle. They've sort of showed off the Grand Cherokee 4XE, which we've kind of heard before, which is a plug-in hybrid. Not a fully electric vehicle, but yeah, it's a plug-in hybrid, interestingly, in that sense. But they also probably have an electric concept. They have all plans to create all electric vehicles by 2025 across all segments, which I think is powerful, to say the least. So, yeah. And they've kind of announced that they're installing solar-powered charging stations across quite famous trails in the U.S. So be on the lookout for that if that's what you're into. And then, interestingly enough, Dodge has announced something of their own, and that is they're going to be offering they're going to be making their own e-muscle car, not regular American muscle car, but an actual American muscle car in that sense. They haven't showed off much about it. They just announced that they're probably going to make one in that sense, but basically the idea behind Dodge making a big charger, which is an electric vehicle primarily, is that internal combustion technology, well, it's going away, sort of, it's becoming defunct, it's a thing of the past, but more than everything, engineering wise, research wise, you've hit the performance limits potentially of you've kind of hit the performance limit of a combustion engine without causing more carbon emissions. So sort of EVs are so if you look at it, the EVs sort of, I mean, you'd probably have much faster performance theoretically, in that sense. And it's a little ironic given in the same good old US of A, Tesla has managed to make some of the fastest cars in the world that are production capable. So it's plausible Dodge can make a fully electric vehicle that is incredibly fast and is a monster, and their cars are big hunkin' vehicles, and it's possible in that point, but that's surprising. I mean, they can't believe they wait this long till 2021 to really think of sort of having a all-electric vehicle, but their plan is that in 2024 they'll create the first full battery electric muscle car, not just another crossover. They could offer a crossover that's electric if you think about it, but they have a full proper muscle car that's big, fat, chunky, has batteries and everything. And as I said, it'll be an absolute, I mean, it'd be absolutely beefy and it'll be fast. It might be the wiper, it could be the charger, you never know, really. It's an opportunity for them to capture a big market share. Ford has really made a bigger name for themselves, and I think that the competition is heating up in the United States. Tesla is really getting into the sports car game in that sense. It dominates with the Model S. In that regard, Model 3 is popular. Ford is offering the F-150 electric, which is an electrified version of an iconic truck. And I think it's high time that that Dodge and Fiat and Jeep and all these iconic brands really step up the fight to their American rivals and their European rivals, more than Tesla, kind of, because their rivals are really ahead in that regard. So this is an interesting approach from Stellantis, and it's interesting to see the options coming from the competition in that regard. They're really charging ahead if you look at it in that sense. What do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at @state_mountain99. Follow me there if you can. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. Share this to your friends and family as much as you can. It really helps us out in that regard. Anyhow, till Tuesday, this is your boy Mountain signing out. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. You know what to do. Take care. And I'll hopefully see you on Tuesday with another episode of Mountain's Gadget Talk. Till then, have a great weekend. And yeah, stay safe. Thanks for listening. And ciao.